Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories from Hacker News. I am your host, Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for tuning in. Today is episode number 376, and we are covering the top trending stories from yesterday, April 24, 2026. We have a very AI-heavy lineup today, which probably will not surprise anyone, but there is some massive news in the space. We are going to talk about the huge release of DeepSeek V4, Google's massive $40 billion investment in Anthropic, and a really interesting piece from a developer who just canceled their Claude subscription due to declining quality.
We will also be stepping outside the AI bubble to discuss Norway's new ban on social media for kids under 16, and we will wrap up with a classic developer psychology post about sabotaging your own projects through overthinking and scope creep.
Let us dive right into the biggest story of the day, which absolutely dominated Hacker News with over 1,800 points. DeepSeek V4 is officially live and open-sourced. The technical details here are just staggering. They released two main models, DeepSeek V4 Pro and DeepSeek V4 Flash.
The Pro model is massive. We're talking 1.6 trillion total parameters with 49 billion active parameters, and they're claiming performance that rivals the world's top closed source models. But what really caught my eye is the context window. A 1 million token context length is now the default across all their official services. They're calling it the era of cost-effective 1 million context length.
And then you have the Flash model, which is 284 billion total parameters, but only 13 billion active. It's designed to be the fast, highly cost-effective option, but they claim its reasoning capabilities closely approach the Pro version. They also highlighted structural innovations like token-wise compression and DeepSeek sparse attention, which is how they're achieving this massive context window with drastically reduced compute costs.
The Hacker News comments on this were fascinating, especially from people using these models for high-level academic research. A user named Hodgehog11 had a great breakdown. They test these models on novel probability and statistics problems at the master's and PhD level. For a long time, they said Gemini Pro 3.1 and GPT 5.5 were the only models that could even touch these problems. But they reported that DeepSeek V4 Pro with max thinking enabled does remarkably well. It might not have the initial insight of Gemini, but the follow-up proofs it generates are nearly complete.
That is a huge endorsement. It really shows how the gap between open weight models and the massive proprietary models has practically vanished. And speaking of open weights, there was a whole subthread of users talking about running these models locally. One user casually mentioned running the 671 billion parameter DeepSeek Prover model at home.
I loved the reply to that comment, someone just asking, is your house's heating system based on H100s? But it is true. The local LLM community is doing wild things with quantized versions of these models. People are running 400 and 500 gigabyte models on their home rigs. It is a completely different landscape than it was even a year ago.
It really is, and the competition is so fierce right now, which perfectly transitions into our next story. Google is planning to invest up to $40 billion in Anthropic. This got over 400 points on the site.
$40 billion is just an astronomical number, even for Google. But the context here is really important. A few weeks ago, Anthropic signed a deal to buy multiple gigawatts of next-generation TPU capacity from Google and Broadcom. So this investment is highly intertwined with their infrastructure needs.
Exactly. A user named SkyBrian had a great analysis of this in the comments, calling it a massive-scale version of vendor financing. Basically, Google knows exactly how Anthropic is doing because Anthropic buys computing services from Google. Google makes an equity investment, but a lot of that money flows right back to Google's cloud and hardware divisions to pay for compute.
It is a brilliant hedge for Google. We all know Google has their own Gemini models, and they are competing directly with Anthropic's Claude and OpenAI. But if the HEI race turns out to be a winner-takes-all scenario, having all your eggs in the internal Google DeepMind basket is incredibly risky. If Anthropic wins the race, Google still owns a massive chunk of the winner.
The comments got into a really interesting debate about whether AI is actually a winner-takes-all market. Some argued that once an AI can autonomously, recursively self-improve, whoever gets there first leaves everyone else in the dust. But others pointed out that the gap between the top models is measured in months, not years. Just look at DeepSeek catching up to GPT 5.5 and Opus 4.7. The lead changes hands constantly.
That is true. But even if it is a duopoly or a triopoly, the revenue is so concentrated at the top that Google wants a piece of every pie. But while the valuations are soaring, the actual user experience on the ground is facing some growing pains. That brings us to our third story, a blog post by Nikki Reinhart titled, "I Canceled Claude, Token Issues, Declining Quality, and Poor Support."
This post really resonated with the community, pulling in over 800 points. Nikki was a big fan of Claude Code initially, but over the last few weeks, the experience just degraded. The main complaints were around token limits and support. Nikki sent two simple questions to Claude Haiku after a 10-hour break, and suddenly the token usage spiked to 100%.
And when Nikki reached out to support, they just got an automated AI response quoting the docs about daily limits, followed by a message saying the ticket was closed and replies might not be monitored. It is the classic infuriating customer service loop. But beyond the support issues, Nikki felt the actual coding quality was dropping. They caught Claude Opus doing a really lazy workaround. Instead of editing sliders in JSX properly, the model just wrote a generic initializer to auto-inject value displays. When called out on it, Claude actually apologized and admitted it was being lazy.
The Hacker News thread on this was deeply divided. You had a lot of developers agreeing with Nikki. One user pointed out that when they write detailed markdown specs for Claude, the generated code often misses requirements, duplicates logic, or writes tests that just fake their way to a pass. They made a profound point. Reading and verifying code takes way more mental effort than writing it. So if the AI generates slightly flawed code, you actually end up spending more time debugging it than if you had just written it yourself.
But then you have the other side of the spectrum. A user named Only Real Cuzzo said they are still finding Claude code absolutely outstanding, writing systems-level code in hours that would normally take months. They are running multiple clients almost 24/7 and happily paying $200 a month for it.
It seems to come down to how you use it and the size of your code base. Small apps or isolated refactors work beautifully. But once the codebase is large and has weird edge cases, the models start hallucinating API shapes or forgetting old requirements. Someone in the thread mentioned Steve Yegi's new book, Vibe Coding. The takeaway from the book is that using AI effectively is a distinct skill that takes about a year of solid work to master. You have to develop a gut feeling for when the model is about to go haywire.
It is definitely a new paradigm. We are shifting from being code writers to being code reviewers and AI managers. And clearly, the infrastructure and token economics are still struggling to keep up with the demand.
Let us shift gears away from AI for a moment. Our fourth story is a Bloomberg piece that got nearly 400 points. Norway is set to become the latest country to ban social media for under 16s.
This is a trend we are seeing accelerate globally. The Norwegian government is pushing this to let kids be kids, protecting them from algorithms and the constant fire hose of information. But the Hacker News discussion took a really interesting turn regarding how these laws are popping up everywhere simultaneously.
Yeah, a user named KDHEIWNS pointed out the irony that countries can't even agree on a unified drinking age, but somehow the whole world is simultaneously agreeing that 16 is the exact age for social media and that we need strict ID verification to enforce it. They felt there was a 0% chance this movement is entirely organic.
That sparked a massive debate about globalization versus grassroots movements. Another user countered that the world is just much more connected now. Social networks are a global product, so the political movements reacting to them are also global. When Meta publishes quarterly reports bragging that Reels increased time spent on site by 30%, governments everywhere see the same data and the same psychological impact on their youth.
The thread really dug into the mechanics of this. Some users felt it was a coordinated push by transnational elites to implement digital IDs and clamp down on internet freedom, comparing it to the old TV rating systems, which varied wildly by country. But others argued that child safety online is actually the most heavily activist-driven topic out there. Groups like the Molly Rose Foundation in Britain have massive public support. Polls show that 70 to 80% of the public actually want these regulations.
It is a tough balance. On one hand, the psychological toll on kids who are not equipped to handle the entire world's problems in their pocket is real and devastating. On the other hand, implementing strict age verification fundamentally changes the architecture of the internet and privacy for everyone, not just kids. It is a debate we are going to be having for the rest of the decade.
Absolutely. All right, for our final story today, we have a fantastic blog post by Kevin Lehnig titled, "Sabotaging Projects by Overthinking, Scope Creep, and Structural Diffing." This got nearly 400 points and is just a perfect distillation of the developer mindset.
Kevin talks about how his side projects usually go one of two ways. Either he just builds the thing and is happy, or he decides to look for prior art. And looking for prior art is the trap. He starts wondering if he should incorporate broader scopes or build on top of existing tools. And suddenly he has spent hours researching and hasn't actually built anything.
He gives a great example. He wanted a nicer diffing workflow in Emacs. He spent an entire weekend researching semantic tree diffing, reading about tools like Difftastic, Gumtree, and DiffSitter. He went down this massive rabbit hole of PhD-level computer science problems, dealing with abstract syntax trees and Dijkstra-based mapping approaches. And then he realized his original goal was just to build a simple tool for himself that would have taken 4 hours.
What I found really fascinating was his concept of the conservation of scope creep. Kevin noticed that because he can write code faster now using LLM agents, he ends up building completely unnecessary features. He was building a fuzzy path search tool and had an LLM help him. Because it was so easy, he decided to add complex regex anchor functionality for file paths. He spent hours designing it with the AI, only to realize later he had literally never needed anchor functionality in his life, and he threw all the code away.
The conservation of scope creep is such a brilliant way to put it. Any increase in programming speed is offset by a corresponding increase in unnecessary rabbit holes. The top comment on Hacker News compared this exact phenomenon to getting a PhD. You take a topic, read all the related work, experience massive scope creep, exhaust your initial energy, and then have to force yourself across the finish line.
Another commenter joked about the timeline of these projects. Day 1, demonstrate a simple concept. Day 400, build an experimental apparatus in orbit at a Lagrange point to detect a universal particle. We have all been there. The advice from the thread for finishing projects, whether it is a PhD or a weekend coding session, is to aggressively reduce the scope. Figure out your core success criteria and ignore everything else. Embrace your inner clueless 20-year-old and just do things.
That is great advice to end on. Keep your scope small and actually ship your projects. That does it for today's episode of HN Pod. We covered the massive DeepSeek V4 release, Google's $40 billion bet on Anthropic, the struggles with Claude's token limits, Norway's social media ban, and the eternal struggle of developer scope creep.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us a review. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day and happy coding.